Welcome to the Front Row Geeks podcast, episode one. Wow, guys, we did it. We got to episode one. We're here. Or have some hits on the first episode. Thanks a lot for everyone who listened to that. And now I gotta figure out what to say from this intro. In the future, maybe I want to be doing like thank yous and shout outs and sponsorships and stuff like that. But wow, now it's just, you know, say hi. We're going to have to add more stuff to this intro as we grow, which, you know, that's what I'm hoping for. But, you know, maybe we'll tell you a little bit what's going on in our lives as we try to book more interviews, get the gang together and do some more talking like I did with David the other week. So expect more than that. So thank you very much for listening to the podcast. This week's episode is with Dave Hatt of Hatt's Games. I've never had a conversation like that with this guy before, and really cool guy. Owns that game shop, and it's, I mean, you basically heard an interview, but wow, it's inspiring to hear him talk about all his passion for owning the place and putting it together and just letting games be games. It's really cool. I had a lot of fun talking to him, and he's a really great guy, so, you know, y'all should visit him. Buy his stuff, play his games, play in there. That's what he wants. So, I say we oblige him. So, again, thanks for listening to the podcast, and I'll talk to you next time.
Welcome to Front Row Geeks.
She's not even paying attention.
I'm sorry about that. I mean, that's what I thought you were going to go with.
In fact, yeah. Throws a passion.
How did you break that bet again? Well, now, that's a long story, but we're in good company. All right. So, I'm going to start off with... I've been personally coming to your shop for like 3 years. Because I heard there was a group on Meetup. For the tabletop RPG, I think you know Woody and Wally and that group, and that's the group I joined that got me into more of the tabletop scene, because I've been into games mostly this entire time.
Has it been that long? That's crazy.
I can't believe it's already been that was like 3 years ago, I think.
I just stopped referring to Woody as the new guy.
You still call him the new guy?
Yeah, on occasion.
Okay, how new was he when I came here?
Oh,
because this was like 3 years ago, probably to the day almost.
A wife, I mean, Woody's about 3 years in, isn't he?
Yeah.
There you go.
He made it sound like he's been here forever when I got here. He knew what he was doing.
Well,
and he knew by name. It was like, yeah, that's Hat. Oh my god, you know the guy who's in charge of this place?
Well, that's not hard.
I assume lots of authority and respect to people in charge of anything, so.
No, we're family, not authority figures.
Well, yeah, since then I've been learned on that subject. You've been really cool to what I've seen you do. And I've just been avoiding you, really.
I don't need to do that, man.
Don't they say don't meet your heroes?
Don't put us on a pedestal.
No, but you know, seriously, you've been really good. And even if you and I haven't had a lot of personal experience, I know just from the guys that you're a really good guy. Mm. And the events that you do here all the time is just amazing.
Well, we got to keep it rolling, boss. I mean, people got to have something to do. You got to remember, we're basically the equivalent to the movie theater visit. And we take up the same slot that another hobby would. So it's got to be fun and relaxing.
What kind of events you've been doing around here lately? I've been kind of off the map for a few months, just because I've been doing some stuff with jobs.
Well, coming in now is actually interesting, because this is the event season for gaming. Next weekend we have Nationals for Legend of the Five Rings card game. At the end of the month we have a 40K tournament using the Bay Area Open rules, which is kind of a big deal. It's basically the players took the game over and decided to make their own set of tournament rules for it, and it's spreading like wildfire. It's actually pretty fun. We have two cons. We have, and we participate both in con and direction and in vending. We've got a league going on right now. Fantasy's prepping for a statewide tournament. This is the season for big events. So you'll see a lot of people change gears from as far back as last month and through the next month, where they change mindsets from casual gameplay into a more tournament mindset or to a more competitive mindset. Even the board gamers get a little more competitive.
and that's the other thing. That's the other thing about coming to here the last few years too, that it's expanded like my board game perception. Like there's some stuff I could never imagine to play, and people have coming up with stuff that I, if it wasn't for my trips to California for this particular game conference I go to, I don't think I would have heard of half the board games that are out there, and then own some of them.
That's the thing, though, is breaking that perception is kind of key. You think about it, like, I support board games that support other products in my store, so I don't have a lot of board games. But the key is understanding that there's a board game for not just everybody, but every scenario. They're not just a pile of Monopoly pieces. I mean, you got cards for those people who like to flop cards. You got, you know, adventure games that are storytelling games. They're board games, too. You've got things that help you build empires, like Civ and all the other classic video games. You've got games that you have to come back and play again and again. Things like the Risk Legacy. The game changes its rules.
Risk Legacy?
Yeah.
There's something besides just normal Risk?
Oh, yeah, there's tons of them.
I mean, I've heard like different editions of Risk, or like maybe like the Star Wars Risk or something like that, but what's different about Legacy?
A Risk Legacy starts off with the most basic set of rules the game has. But every time you end the game, you advance the timeline of the board game itself. So you open up a packet, and it permanently adds, removes, or changes rules, as well as pieces on your board. They also have another Risk that's, that came out in Transformers. It's kind of fun. that the board moves at random intervals. And so, because it's supposed to be taking place on Cybertron, so a chunk of your board gets up, so Asia goes and bumps up against Australia, and that kind of stuff happens. They have a Lord of the Rings Risk, where you're still playing Risk, but you have to sometimes donate armies to stop this ring from getting to Mordor, otherwise everybody loses. So it's not just color and flavor. They add mechanics to it that make it fun, too.
And I got one, too, another Lord of the Rings Risk, that the ring travels randomly while you're playing,
mm-hmm.
and whenever it gets to Mordor, the game is ended.
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning.
So whoever has the most property at that point wins.
Good times.
That sounds... Okay, personally speaking, more rules don't necessarily intimidate me, but I know that's probably something I had. If I family game night at my house, if I even said rules like that, and people would go, no, let's just go back to Monopoly.
Well, your best example of what a lot of board games do right now is Catan. Catan is a very simple board game.
I haven't tried that one yet.
I highly recommend it. It is no more complex than Monopoly. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's more simple. But the trick with Catan is you play this game. And every time you play this game, some factor of the game's different. Not just the dice rolls. The board's different. But the rules aren't so complicated. It's not awful. It's just put the tiles down in a different order. But when you get done with that, when you finally say, okay, I like Catan, but it's getting kind of old, then like a lot of other board games, you buy an expansion. And the expansion, now that you're comfortable with base rules, adds a few more. Not a ton more, a few more rules. And then your game's completely different. And then you can always take the expansion out when you want to go back to your classic. There's nothing stopping it. That's why board games are cool.
The other thing I haven't gone into yet, and I was talking to someone over here about it right now, is that I haven't done anything with miniatures yet. I haven't jumped into that yet. And Woody talks about that all the time. And it's not, even though it's not necessarily the same thing, but what's the name of the game? Twilight Imperium. Okay, I have a friend of just a few months ago introduced me to that game, and 3 months later, he's detailing to me step by step all the stuff he's doing with the miniatures and customizations, and I'm going to build my own solar system map, and I just haven't jumped into that kind of thing yet.
The high-end board games, Arkham Horror, Fortune and Glory, Twilight Imperium, Even to some extent, other games like Rex and Diplomacy. Those are investments. Those are hobby games. Because if you think about it, this game like Twilight Imperium takes anywhere from 3 to 15 hours to play. That is a, that's
we
a
have
weekend.
We have to schedule 2 months in advance for all five of us to get to, of our friends to get together and play that game. It's November 2nd is my next play date.
And as you know now, the rules for those games are intensive and flexible, and there's packages and player options. And those are the fun hobby games. Those are actually closer to hobby games than actual true board games. But they are very rewarding in the idea that there's so many variables and so much going on. None of the mechanics are terribly complex in any of the games, because if they were, they would just... But because they're all tweakable, variable, replaceable, you can get a much longer lifespan out of a big game like that.
Yeah, I think the way that our group goes, we'll be playing that forever. And I guess that's the kind of works that our schedules don't always fit, so that we don't play it all the time. Otherwise, I feel like we'd probably play it to death pretty soon. But thankfully, we space out enough, and then okay, we played. We can go another 2 minutes without playing it. I'll see you guys next Christmas. We try it again.
Minis games are a whole different beastie altogether. the main miniatures games in the market are all pretty much the same product. They're different scales, but the concept's the same. You build and collect and hobby. That's the key part of all the miniatures games right now. You are invested because you are building and painting and doing these things. And you can paint them any way you want. There are very few rules and regulations to how they should look. And those are just so that your opponent knows what the heck they're looking at when they're playing the game with them. And then when you actually are playing the game, the reward is that is your... Those are your models. Those are your model cars, because it's roughly equivalent. You know, toy soldiers, model cars that you've built, painted, put together, have a story for. You take it to the level you want, and then you get to play this game from now on. The cool thing is that unlike CCGs or unlike some of the collectible board games, generally it's a heavy investment up front that you don't really need to do it anymore than maintain every once in a while. The most common thing we have is Magic's a really good game. And 40K is a really good game. And everybody says they're both expensive. And it's true. 40K, you're talking about to get yourself up and running with all the bumps and scrapes. It's going to cost high three digits to get in that game. Magic's doesn't cost like that to get in. Magic's buy a deck, buy some boosters, go. You're like $60 in, you can play a game and be at least comfortable in the gameplay you have. The trouble comes in. And once you buy that mid-triple digits of 40K, you're good for potentially life. You may need to spend maybe a new box of something or a couple whatevers when a new codex comes out every 2-3 years. Magic, if you want to be competitive, is a $50 a week habit with a $250.
I was about to say, because Magic's been around for as long as I can remember. I can't imagine the cards that you got like back in the mid-90s would be as effective as they are today. Or the person who's been playing that long probably is 20 years worth of cards to call on.
That's the good and the bad thing about CCGs, is the CCGs are living, breathing games. They're not like board games where once you know the rules, you got it. They're not like miniature games, which are sort of like board games where they have expansions and you pick what kind of things you have. You're still picking your Legos. Card games are very much the art of a changing, constantly changing game. Even the base rules of card games change as they go through. And every 3 months, you get new rules, you get new cards, you get new mechanics. Certain things will become more prevalent. It changes constantly. The problem with that is that the competitive gameplay can't allow every single card they've made to be legal. There's only so many ways to be inventive without having cards with blocks of text a mile long. Sometimes you have to cut the fat, reprint a card, or change a wording. And so card games have to have a limited format for their competitive play to know that, you know.
So there's actually a body that, because I'm actually very ignorant when it comes to this, there's actually a body that says, okay, these cards maybe not usable anymore in official play, or we need to change them, so this is the new edition, you can't use the old one anymore.
About 15, 16 years ago, they actually fixed all that. What it is that for the cutting-edge gameplay, what they consider the best gameplay, the highest level of gameplay for any card game that's out there popular. Magic the Gathering, Legend of the Five Rings, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, all those.
Yu-Gi-Oh, I know that one.
They have what they call a strict or a type 1. It's the format where it's only the most modern cards and the base materials available. It's very limited. It changes all the time. It's the most expensive but also the most rewarding competitive nature of the game. Then almost everybody now has an extended format that goes back a little bit further, and then they have an open format for casual play, making your cards useful, but you may downgrade your type of format as your deck gets older.
Okay, wow. That's a lot to drink in.
It is. It's very intense, but that's, like I said, card games are a living, breathing thing. So all the aspects of them change as they go.
You know, that's actually what... I guess that similar kind of, just I guess to give it an analogy, one of the things that always, online, like MMOs, online RPGs, it kind of reminds me of that a little bit, simply because, you know, there's the initial investment, that's right, but you're going to keep playing, you have to invest X amount and Y amount of time, and oh, new expansion, oh, well, new gear, and for me personally, I just couldn't do it anymore because... I always had to think, well, now if I want to go play the new Call of Duty, now I have to stop this account, or I have to pay for an account I'm not using, or if I'm away too long, I'm going to miss out like on like 30 different events that go on. I just couldn't handle it. Even the free-to-play ones always got to me. And that's probably why Yu-Gi-Oh! Is probably the farthest card game that I've ever got as far as, you know, collecting cards go. Because at just point one day, it's like, oh, I don't want to spend more money on another deck, another booster deck. Everyone I know has another card that beats everything I got. I can't do it anymore. I just can't do it anymore. I can't keep up.
Yeah,
I'm going to go play Tetris now.
Card games do get like that at times.
Oh, I mean, and like nothing against that, because I respect that. I think there's a lot of work that has to go into that. And a lot of organization, a lot of research, and I give anyone this, they can keep up with that. For me, it was just like, okay, I'm going to go... play an RPG, JRPG instead.
Well, that's the cool part about games in general as well, which I'm glad that the board game market jumped out of its fetal stance and actually got into the more active gaming market, is the concept of gaming environment. Your gaming environment was a concept that was brought up years and years ago, but actually started applying about the time Magic started getting hot. And then minis started taking the concept. It was an understanding that of all the stuff in your environment, this is what is good because of this combination and what it can trump, what Trump said. Basically, the odds of it being a successful combination of miniatures or cards or your odds against certain opponents. The understanding of that creates this interesting feel, like in minis right now. Warhammer 40,000. Eldar's on top of the game right now.
What's it?
Warhammer 40,000 is a game made by Games Workshop.
Okay.
Very popular, especially with military folk, because they can take it anywhere. It's a science fiction game that has a race called the Eldar. Basically space elves. They're just basically space elves. Super technology, yada, yada, yada.
Sounds great.
Yeah. They're pointy-eared freaks, but that's okay. The Eldar are on top right now because they're tough as nails. They have really good firepower. It's a science fiction game. But they also have weaseled themselves into a way, either accidentally or on purpose through game design, into a position where only the weird armies really have a really solid chance against them. The standard army has a severe disadvantage.
But when you say standard army, do you mean like a standard army that's not of that race? Or
I mean, standard army is in, I built this army, I think it's okay. This is an army that can take on other people. You know, I can fight with the orcs, space orcs, and I could go fight with these traitorous chaos space marines, and it's a decently good fight. In the mix of average builds and average armies amongst a lot of players, the Eldar are king because only the weird off-the-wall stuff really seems to get their goat. Thus, the environment would say the Eldar are superior in the environment, and the weirdos are generally not, because the field, as it were, most of the body of the armies and things can defeat the weirdos. But they sidewinder. They actually have an angle on defeating the top army in the game. Card games are exactly the same way. In fact, Magic is the king of this, because it's not this army or this deck. It is this specific card combo that I can run in several different types of decks. and it's like splicing together little bits of DNA in your deck to make it a different critter. And like, you've seen those critters where they, you know, like the, the meeples and creeples. But it's boiled it down to a science where this specific combo at this specific time is better than that specific combo at that specific time. And that's the fine-tuned element of judging an environment.
So my question is that how much, not to take away credit from the creators, but how much of that you think was by design, and or how much of that you think it was just accidentally evolved to that?
I honestly would have to say that every inn goes through this one very painful step. And it's obvious. It's not obvious. They don't say, hey, we achieved this milestone today. But you can see it when the game changes. For games like, well, they're, again, since we're using common term games, for games like Magic, you could see it roughly 4 years after its creation, maybe five. And you notice the card text changed. The art is maybe no longer recycled. The combos are a little more complicated. They synergize better. They work together. And it's that point that you figure out, well, what happened? Well, they hired beta testers outside their company. What? Yeah, they just threw out PDFs and had the players test it. For 40K, it was... The 40K has never done this. Uh-huh. Games Workshop hates the idea of out-of-house stuff. They basically have three dudes in a basement beta test everything. But once the armies get into the world, you can see, oh my god, this new army is either broke or sucks. Everybody gets their initial impression on the book. And then roughly a month later, you'll see it slide into its place. As opposed to what everybody said, you'll actually get firm results as people play it, test it, and then they tweak it and then come up with an army list. Whether it was the original intended army lists that they wanted or not, you'll start seeing, well, this is this specific list and that specific list. The players got a hold of it. For board games, you'll see the player associate stuff like Board Game Geek. They'll give you the analysis of the board game, give you tactics for the board game, and then it gives you new insight on how to play the board game as opposed to the same old, same old. Things like, even though it's a downer like Axis and Allies, mm-hmm. there are people that have boiled that down to a specific action-by-action breakdown. But because they did that, it gives you a better understanding of, well, I don't have to do what they do, but I see why they did what they did. And now I can play this game differently because I understand that. The players got a hold of it. The board games, the minis games, card games, everything. Once the players get a hold of it, that's when the game starts changing frequently and for the better.
Okay, that brings up something else that I've heard, well, not recently, because I feel like the news for this was coming out like a year and a half ago, but the new edition of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
At least when I was hearing it, when things started coming out about it, there was a lot of people kind of naysaying it the whole time, but it was still in beta then. And I feel like a lot of that has gone away, but I'm not sure why or how. And do you think that's this kind of testing has something to do with that? Or actually, I don't even know if it's officially released. I haven't checked up on that.
I got it right there on the wall.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. all right, the thing about D&D, you got to remember, is every time they've come out with a new edition, they piss off their player base. But
just like anything else, right?
Well, yeah. Every time they come out with a new edition, they do improve the game in some way. Arguably, 4th didn't. But it did do something very important that makes 5th a real winner. When you had people especially go from 2nd edition D&D to 3.0, 3.5, it wasn't even the same game. It was labeled the same. The mechanics, the way you did things, the very adventures you did, the world you were playing on, all completely different. It was called D&D because that's what they wanted to call it, and not because they felt they needed to. But the game was good. It was successful. They improved its interaction with customers. And what they did, because, you know, second D&D, we all love it, but it's a chunky monkey. It's awful to play. Third got rid of that. Third said, well, you want to be a fighter? Here's how you level up. By the way, when you level up, you get to choose all your cool stuff. You don't have to look for book 57 or check the monster manual to see if you're... No, it's right here. And if you want, here's some expanded product and more expanded product, which is the problem with 3 and 3.5, to build the character exactly the way you want it. And then 4 came around. I have a personal aversion of 4, but my personal aversion actually is in support of them, ironically, because 4 came around, and the game got dirt pants simple. Things got derpy. Things dumbed themselves down to the point where
for context, on my sake, where does Pathfinder play in that?
Actually, I can put that in perspective as soon as I get done with Force.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a really good comparison for the new edition.
Okay.
When they dumbed down 4th, they made the game so simple 8-year-olds could play it. Which, you know, everybody that's playing the super complex 3-5, and everybody from old 2nd edition like, what the hell? This is an insult to my intelligence. But it did do something really nice. It cleaned up a phase of the type of the most important phase of the game, the combat system, which admittedly was already pretty good, but they managed to make it beautiful. Streamlined. Everybody knows what everybody's doing all the time. Everybody knows how their actions interact, when their actions interact. None of this negotiation between player and GM required to see if an ability goes off. You know. Now it's just story to see if it goes through. So they cleaned the most important mechanic of the game up. And that's that took them miles. That's why I hate the game, is it's a combat game. But I can say what I can. Now, you were asking about Pathfinder. 4th edition is the reason why Pathfinder exists, as far as I can tell. No, everybody's got their things. But, like I told you, whenever D&D makes a new edition, it pisses off its customer base. Well, it pissed off not just its customers, but it pissed off... Wizards of the Coast pissed off kind of a manufacturer that supported them, Paizo. Paizo and their associated press members print the maps, the books, the lion's share of all the support product for Wizards of the Coast when just before 4th came out. They were kings of 3.0, 3.5 material. So when 4th came out, they basically got shoved out the door and went, nah, we don't need you right now. So the creators of Paizo were also gamers, and they're like, well, fine, we're just going to make 3.555. They didn't know what they were calling it.
3.2.5?
They actually...
3.5.2.
The internet called it 3.75 when they were beta testing it. And when it came out, Pathfinder was 3.5, fixed, revised, cleaned up, just what everybody wanted. And it created this huge influx of people that were either diving out of 4th edition because, well, 4th is fun, but that's what I'm used to playing. And it crafted this huge society of people that go around and actively recruit and wander around and have these big meetups for the Pathfinder Society. And it became a cultural phenomenon.
Okay, yeah, because I've heard the Pathfinder Society. That's something familiar to you. I don't know if I've ever participated in anything like that before. I played a Pathfinder game or two in the last few years since I started coming to the shop, but I don't. It was never with your Pathfinder Society event.
The trick was, you met some of the Pathfinder guys here and there. They've got some here today. It was everything Wizards didn't do. It was Pathfinder events were organized by people, a lot like the old White Wolf guys, where it's a group of people who assess and then try to create as many events as possible practically. They take in the materials, they spread them out as far as they can, and then they do big events, like they do at my store, like they do at conventions, to get more people into the game. It's a society. It really is a society at that point.
That's really neat.
Yeah. They did that because Wizards of the Coast says, you will play D&D on Wednesdays, only on Wednesdays, you will only play these things.
Oh, that really?
Yes.
How do you enforce that?
They do. Because you cannot... that's a different conversation altogether. You do not have to, but you do not gain any of their benefits, nor do you retain their support if you do it on the days they don't recommend you do it.
Huh.
Yes.
Okay.
The Pathfinder Society spontaneously became super popular because they could run the games whenever it was appropriate. They had books that people wanted to read, and it was a monster, and it still is a huge monster. The only thing that's put a chink in its armor lately has been the new edition of D&D. All
right, and so, because again, I was hearing so many, I can't believe it. In fact, I feel like I heard the same stuff that you're saying about the transition to 4, dumb it down and too simple and stuff like that. I thought that's what I was hearing about 5, too. So did that turn out to be the case?
5 is the first thing I've ever seen where they have not made that argument. They said things got dumb when they went to advanced. They said things got too simple when they went to 3.0. They said things were made for babies when they went to 4. Those arguments about the complexity of the game, it's more complex mechanically than 4th edition is, but we can't really judge it yet as we don't have all of our core books out. At this time, the DMG is not released yet. That's the last of the 3 core books you need to judge a game system. But they released a whole bunch of other material so that we can play before it comes out. The Tyranny of Dragons and the Horde of the Dragon Queen are the Wednesday night gaming materials they provide for D&D, and it's giving you lots of crazy previews of what's coming up. And the Monster Manual just released last week, and that was, it's pretty good. It tells you what's going on in the world, tells you what worlds are available for gameplay. It's very nice. But it is more complicated than 4th. It has far heavier role-playing elements. So roughly a quarter of your character is mechanics associated with the background story of your character.
Oh, really?
Not only can you invoke them, you actually have to write them on your sheet. You have your best aspects, your flaw. You've got background, like I just made a guy making the fighter for the party as a tank. And yeah, I do all the fighter stuff, get the stats right. I'm going to be an Eldritch Knight, so I had to mix it up a little bit, grabbed a couple spells. But I also had to put down I was a soldier, and in the soldiery I was an officer. And those gave me not just abilities, but they helped me supply me with gear. And then on top of those, I had to choose personality traits, which can... which actually almost got me into a lot of trouble because there was a specific mission in there that you accidentally raise an army of undead and you're supposed to run away. And I checked all my personality traits and I was like, okay, never backs down, always corrects his own mistakes, and is never ever wrong. I was like, I can't leave, guys. Like, why not? Like, I can't leave. My personality says I'm stuck here. So I ended up fighting a horde of zombies. It was kind of cool.
I give you this.
But that's the point, though, is it's... I didn't have to...
That's fascinating. I love that.
Yeah, I didn't have to go, what, my character wouldn't do this because of my alignment, which is still there. I went there and I went, my character is built with this cool background story that I guess I'd fight it out. My character sheet says I would fight it out, so I guess we're going to fight it out.
Wow. So, and so, to me, that sounds like that's a really interesting path to take as far as... Well, I can't really say path when we were just talking about Pathfinder a while ago. Ugh, that's like a bad pun. But I guess that's something they're trying to see where it goes and how people receive it.
Yes. There will be a lot of naysayers because it's the new rules paralysis. People love feats in 3.5. People love feats in 4.0. Feats are still really amazing in D&D Next, D&D 5.0. They're not the same mechanic. And a lot of people will probably be disappointed. Their favorite feats are gone. They're not. Well,
no.
Yeah, it's a problem with perspective, though. Is like, for instance, one of my favorite feats from back in the day was mobility. It was a chain of feats you took that made you exceptionally mobile. You could leave melee combat with somebody without repercussions. You could do all kinds of crazy acrobatics. Those were fun. Those are gone. The reason why they are gone is because you can take a feat to get all of them. The base rulebook took in 3 or 4 of them and gave them to everybody. They're still there. They're just split up and spread all over the place in different format. And so a lot of people won't see that when they first read the book. They're like, oh, man, mobility's gone. No, everybody got base mobility. Everybody. Oh man, I've always I can't cast spells anymore. Well, yeah, you can because everybody's got combat casting. You know, a lot of that's been implemented into different areas of the rulebook, and that's the first glance is going to be kind of a rough one for the hardcore 3.0, 3.5, and Pathfinder players. But they really do a good job of making it package deal savvy. It's when I leveled up, I get this feat, and it's not just a +2 or gives me this. A feat gives you trait enhancement, which is already incredible in and of itself. It gives you skills. So straight up gives you skills that you didn't already have. Cool. It gives you cool special abilities that rank up with you. That's even better. And then and they just pile it on. Like, a feat takes up roughly a quarter of a page now. Every single one.
A feat. Oh, okay.
And they have fewer feats, but they still have these incredible things. You get about every 4 levels that they just change everything about how your character operates. It's insane. So that's what feats are now. They're a completely different animal, but they're still living up to their name, as it were.
So they're still a feat.
They are a feat.
Okay. I'm definitely going to put that on my to-do list then, as far as giving that a try, because that sounds really intriguing. Which is, honestly, I don't know if it's just because of what I've been hearing lately. That's probably the first time I've heard a legitimate, like, positive about what I can expect from that experience.
Yep, I have played the game, and I can tell you that I was cynical as well. I like this edition. I like it for a more reasons that I can count on both my hands. And I have dislikes. They just don't outnumber my likes.
I guess the other thing to keep in mind, I guess especially for people who like the older system, is that the older system didn't go away. You can still play it.
Absolutely correct. It's a role-playing game. That's kind of how that works.
The new system doesn't mean the end of the old, I guess.
No, it never has. And even Wizards of the Coast supports that idea. Did you know that towards the end of 4, they released all of the books for all of the editions of their games, edited and reposted, nice leather covers, and some of them are big fancy covers.
Ooh, it sounds like something I want to put on a shelf.
Exactly. But AD&D, D&D 3.5, classic D&D
books. AD&D is the only D&D book that I own, and I didn't even own it to play it. I only own it as a reference, to just like a relic of that time, and looking at it and like a little, learning a little bit about where a lot of this stuff came from. It's basically just a reference guide and kind of a fun book to have. Almost a coffee table book for me, but...
Well, that's pretty much what they are now. I mean, that's the other cool thing about looking back at the old role-playing games. D&D is the perfect example of this. As you look back and you go, man, these rules suck. What the hell? And the classic one's always like Thaco, or you go through and you're trying to decide whether you want to level up as your race or level up as your class. And you're like, what? What is this stuff? Why am I rolling 2d12 for a check that only applies to seeing secret doors? What's going on? And then you look at the next edition, you're like, oh, okay, this is a little easier. Okay, and then you can see where people went, nope, get rid of that derp, try this. For good, bad, or indifferent, you can actually see positive change over the years, all the way from original book to now. And it's really cool to see that. And that's why they're good coffee table books. You're like, hey, read this. This is going to be hilarious. Now read the next one. It's always slightly hilarious. And then you get up today, you're like, that's kind of a cool game.
Even sometimes some of the art they have in there is kind of just neat to look at. Like, what they were thinking of back when, and like how much of today's inspired by stuff in that book, or related books.
I still remember the terrible drawings of googly-eyed monsters and weird slab-faced paladins and... Now, admittedly, that's where we get interesting critters from. I mean, the concept of what the dragon looks like was, for us, was basically defined by very few movies and the artist that Wizard of the Coast beat over the head and then, you know, stole their dragon. But, I mean, like, I got the Dragonlance on my wall. I've got some of the Terry Brooks and McCaffrey. And then, of course, some of the best artists of dragons are from role-playing games. They really are. I mean... When we were first getting the new D&D, back before anybody knew what was going on at the end of the second, there was a huge red dragon, right? It's got that warrior with his back to his shield up and the sword up, flames coming behind, he's obviously on some sort of peak, you know, big-ass red dragon about ready to make his day really terrible. That artwork's beautiful, and red dragons have generally looked exactly like that in the role-playing game ever since.
That's red dragons. You're talking to the right person here.
See, there we go.
Ah, yeah. I'm pretty sure I have in my cycle of wallpapers, maybe even the same red dragon is on there somewhere. And if not, I'm going to look for it now.
See? No, it's the concept that not just the, like you were saying, you know, the old creatures and where they came from. That's a very potent example of, well, everybody knows what a red dragon looks like. Well, yeah, they do. Because... Bam. They did that back in the day.
Here's the book.
Good times.
Speaking of good times, you got to tell me a little bit about your store.
Well, where do you want to start? The basics?
Where did it start? What made you think I'm going to open a store and have people yell at me in person?
Back in the day, there was only really... there were technically 4 game stores, but there was only 2 active gaming, community game stores. And one was Hardcastle, and the other one was called Things for Thinkers. And me and my bros, we're always forward thinkers. I was hooked in with a less reputable crowd that I am hooked up with today. Ooh. I was young and I was dumb.
I'm going to picture like Gangs of New York right now in my head.
In some You'll cases, be the butcher. Maybe just add some dollop of geek and you're not far off. But the long story short was our community got shattered at one point due to a very, very terrible event.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. And at the same time that was going on and trying to resolve, our community was falling apart. My brother and I had just finally gotten back together after years of being separated. And we didn't have a choice in that. That was just life. One of the game stores just bit it. Things for Thinkers just went under. And now we're down to Hardcastle, which was admittedly our primary stop.
Okay, so that other store was the one where you said that was more of the community kind of store.
Things for Thinkers and Hardcastles were the communities I was exposed to.
Okay.
Hardcastle Cards and Games was run by Ray Ralston with an iron fist, and it actually made us more ornery than we were supposed to be. But it did promote a very characterful crowd. Good people, but characterful. Things for Thinkers is a little bit more of a clean establishment. Old-fashioned, combined with a few new guys, creating a well-balanced crowd. But they were our competitor. Not as a store, but as a crowd. You know, those are the other guys. Screw that. when they went under, it wasn't a good moment at all. It was, what the hell? What happened? That's Things for Thinkers. They've been around for 25 goddamn years. What happened?
What time frame are we talking about here with this?
Wife.
What?
Things for Thinkers.
Things for Thinkers went down in 2004, early-ish, because she started late 2004.
It's 2004.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. We kind of, I watched basically the leader of our community, the terrible one was he died. And he was glue for everyone. One of my game stores that I did go to, gone. The other game store bought by a kid my age. My entire gaming world was just screwbarred, upside down, right? And I was going to school, just doing my thing. I was getting ready to peel out, and I wasn't feeling too hot about it. And then my brother, like I mentioned, we just hooked up. We've been seeing each other off and on, just hanging out for like 3-4 months. He gets this wild hair up his ass. He gives me a call. No joke, like in class. I'm like, what the? Oh, God. So I walk outside. I get this phone call. He's like, so, you want to open a game store? I was like, sure. That sounds
tomorrow, fun. Right? 6 p.m.?
Actually, strangely, he's like, okay, I found a game store's worth of inventory, and if we don't hurry, they're going to compact it. It's already
in a garbage. Did he go into a dungeon and fight a red dragon for this? Or did he just find it lying around?
Actually, he found it lying around.
What?
It was in a train car.
Train car.
This store started from the inventory.
Keep talking, I'm in.
the Things for Thinkers, when it closed, it was due to a financial foobar that is, to this day, confounds me. But without going into that, they just threw everything into a train car and put it in a dump. Like it was in a junkyard, or like over on Irvington. Like, it actually was over on Irvington. The car's still there. Jeremy found it while doing some random work for people. And he's like, well, I have an offer from the guy with the trailer car. Do you want to do this? The next week, we got together with a few of our friends, and all of a sudden, I started seeing there was this spark. You know, I went from being down in the dumps to maybe this can happen. Maybe we can bring a game store back. Maybe we can build that community I love to keep. And we kept rolling it, and I wasn't the only one thinking this. We were all invested. We're like, well, we all want what was done back. We want to see the old people back. We want to build a place.
Power to the people.
Exactly. We were grassrooting the hell out of it at the Hooters at Wings Wednesday. We even got the waitress in on it. It was amazing.
Wait, that Hooters, the one over there?
Yeah. That helps.
Now,
yeah.
Pointing. the one off Cole, right?
Yep. Stop sign. That was where our business meetings first took place. That's where we celebrated getting our certificate from the city. That's where we did a lot of our planning. That's where we picked our location at. And we
was this the original location?
This complex
the
was.
Corner.
Yeah.
The original location.
Oh.
Yeah.
As far as you can get from the EGs going east, I have that money on the next building going north from the EGs, where as far from the EGs as you could go north.
Oh, okay.
I know.
But it worked. We lost some people over time because we had a guy named Cade who was basically wanted to be security minister for gaming.
Secure. Okay.
Yeah. quite, remember, characterful.
Okay.
But he ended up having to move back to his family in Florida, and then we got the store up and running just after that happened, and we picked up some amazing people right away. So not only was it something we wanted to do, we found people that were never associated with us that jumped on board. We found people that were just randomly walking by that became success stories. You know, I've got people in my store right now that randomly we found back then, and we've got to watch them grow from kids to adults, and it scares the crap out of me. It makes you feel old. That's the negative part.
Well, I mean, yeah. It's only been 10 years. I mean, honestly,
10 years
when I
was on the 17th of December.
And I was here 3 years ago, started coming here. If you had told me this place is only around for 7 years, I wouldn't have guessed that, because this place feels so at home. Even the first time that I came, I would have believed you if you told me it's been here for 20, 30 years.
Well, that's one of the things, though, is you'll notice our store is not a retail store. It's a workshop that happens to sell stuff. The reason why it's like that is because I have so many different projects coming through and people coming through. I want them to be able to slot themselves in here, feel comfortable about it, build their community, and then see where it goes from there.
It's not called Hats Store. It's called Hats Games.
I sell the product because people want it, but mostly because if we can keep the lights on, we can keep this rolling. That's the only major goal me and the wife have, is we keep this store alive. That way people can come here and enjoy themselves. And yes, that's totally hippie stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Hey, I love it.
But I have found the career
sounds beautiful,
I
man.
Love,
seriously.
And I'm going to support it. And I you'll notice weird things, like we're mutants. We are a game store that operates with without magic on Friday nights right now. I don't know how, but
a game store that doesn't have magic as our primary and doesn't have Games Workshop as our primary.
What's Games Workshop?
That's 40K
fantasy.
We have a wall of them, sure, but we don't rely on them to pay our bills.
They're our second largest.
Again, if my talks to Woody, it makes me feel like 40K happens all the time.
It does. Yes. It doesn't happen as much as it used to, but it happens all the time.
Okay.
It's 40K is currently sitting at about 35% of our sales, which we're considering that magic is less than 5% of our sales. The two largest companies in the industry being that small a percentage of our sales is very unusual for a store like us.
But to bring it home, that way we can keep it rolling. Sorry. The reason why that is the case is because we focus on, well, this is a cool game. I've got a gentleman in my store right now I'm trying to start a community for. I'm offering him tables. He doesn't have to have players. Just set up your stuff. Get your stuff on the table. If it's random and a guy walks to the front door and it starts a community, all power. He gets a table every week. You know, a 40K. When it's hot, it's hot. When it's not, I still offer people tables for it. Board games? Sure. Get in here. Have fun. You want food, drink, coffee? Bring it in here. That keeps you here longer. We sell snacks just to keep you cozy.
Thank you for those snacks. This has kept me going a long time.
See, yeah. And you can thank my wife for the variety of snacks. She actually listens
thank
to you,
you
folks. But the reason why we have so little investment. Yes.
You and your monster drink.
I didn't know
they made iced tea.
Oh, yeah. These are required.
Yeah, I tried bringing in the regular Monster. They sit much longer than the tea-based ones. So
is it lemon iced tea? I like me some
I have lemon
tea.
Orange, and raspberry?
Yeah, raspberry tea?
It's pink.
Okay, it's pink lemonade.
So is it iced tea with Monster?
Yes. Yes.
Does it taste okay?
Oh, yeah, they taste great.
I'm not a big fan of the original Monster.
Here, you're going to have one as soon as we're done here.
Okay.
Look at that, sponsorship right there. But the bringing it home, the reason why we don't have an investment in Magic or in 40K like that is because we took time to pick up what everybody was doing, and we support everybody. And it's really weird mutant product support, but you know what? I'm willing to give everybody a shot.
Hybrid store, actually trying to diversify, trying to make certain that no one category is... We are not a Games Workshop store. We are not a Privateer's Press store. We are not a pure roleplay store. We are come and game.
that's an opening statement I've ever heard one. Oh, that's beautiful. No, and I've felt that coming here. I mean, there's just so much going on here. I don't think I've touched even a whole percentage of what you guys do here. Mostly because Wally and Woody keep me busy with their 2-year long GURPS games, but... Wally, I love them, but
Wally the ultra-violence maniac and and Woody his compatriot in crime.
Oh, I love those guys.
Woody just moved recently.
Wait, what? I didn't hear. I haven't seen them in like a month.
Yeah, he just moved.
Yeah,
Mike, is he gone?
Moved closer.
Oh no, he's here.
Oh,
he moved closer to the store.
Yeah,
but the
I was
going to
freak out, man.
Okay. He moved in with a batch of gamers that he is. He's changing their lives, whether they know it or not, because we have a retired military man named Ed. And Ed is commonly referred to as the grumpy cat because he has the face for it, and he grumps a lot. He's actually a fellow podcaster. We're trying to get used to podcasting so we can do just the 40K battle reports and talk about new industry news and things like that. That's just stick. But the big trick is there's him, who's just kind of a little bit dour. He's got a good sense of humor, but he's generally just kind of grumpy cat. We have another gentleman in the house named Frank, who's a pretty all right guy. He just has these... he gets into these moods where he's, I don't want to do this, or I do want to do this. He's not whimsical, but he blows with the winds, as you might say. And Woody jumped into that household, and the first thing he did was start poking them. He's like, we should go do
this.
Sounds
like him.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't we do that? Why don't we do this? And I've seen the changes in the face of both of those people. He got the grumpy guy to start laughing again. And every time Frank gets weird, he just
So when's
like,
the Christmas movie come out?
Oh, God. Actually, it'll be a Halloween movie.
Oh, no. Wait, we don't discuss the Halloween party.
Oh. You know, I've missed every one of those. Like, out of all the things that I really want to participate in, I haven't gone to a Halloween party yet. Or did I? No, wait. No, actually, no, I did go to one.
Question is,
it's New Year's party I didn't go to.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's another thing we don't discuss.
That's the thing about being open every day of the year. You get to celebrate.
Yeah.
So.
And we are actually open every day of the year. Thanksgiving and
Bless
Christmas,
you.
We are open. We have potlucks. I put out a large spread, and then we have everybody else bringing in on top of that. And that's kind of fitting with our philosophy of the store side is just what pays the bills.
Come and enjoy.
The holidays, we're here so that the military folk have a place to go, so that the students who aren't at home have a place to go, so the people who have gone home and need to recover from being home have a place to go.
Amen to that.
Yeah, we have some good times, especially with the potlucks. The barbecues are fun, but mostly because we barbecue in the summer, it's someone's outside cooking, like actually they're cooking because it's outside, and then they tag
outside,
out.
Outside what? There's an outside.
Yeah, unfortunately, even I occasionally get a tan. Occasionally.
Actually, speaking of outside, and this is another thing I wanted to ask you about. If the calendar is right, today's going to be the second time you guys have a LARP here. Did I read that right?
Is it?
Because last I thought last one was the first one.
They switched to Saturdays, didn't they?
Oh, they switched to Saturdays?
No. Yeah. Did the Blood and Honor move to Saturdays?
Today is supposed to be Blood and Honor. That's correct.
It's the third.
It's the third.
No, it's supposed to be the first
third,
Sunday.
It's the third event of it. He said second. I was correcting it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She was prepping for it this week. So, yes, it will be later today.
Oh, wow.
Sorry about that. Caught us off guard there.
Yeah, it took me a second to figure out which of the LARPs you're meaning because I have three that wander through here.
Okay. Well, this is the first one that I've heard that goes on in two. That's because I got it from the meetup. The meetup updates.
That would be our second regular LARP in the store.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't hear about the other one.
The Mind's Eye Society meets the third Saturday of every month.
Yes, the Desert Rose Group. And,
yep.
That's second Saturday. They start at three with Changeling, The Lost. And then they start up at 8 with Vampire the Requiem. The once a month.
And then the new one is Houses of the Blooded. And it's... For the first group, you've got your choices of... Changeling, the World of Darkness is a dour place. It's a modern setting. And it's always kind of a bit down and out. But the trick is, it's supposed to be that way you interact with it and go punch it in the face for being down and out. That's the way the game is supposed to work.
This is sad. I'm going to hit it.
Especially werewolves, by the way. This is sad. I'm going to eat it. But the trick is, with both of those games, the LARP inspires a community where you build up rapport with your characters and you actually go around and you talk a lot, but you also take actions in small groups and clicks. And then you switch your click up, and then you go and change it up again. It's really nice. It creates a series of characters that are constantly soap operating each other to death.
Oh.
The House of the Blooded is a bit of a different beast. Theoretically, it can be played the same way.
And this is the one that goes on
these
days,
that goes
on
Sundays. Yeah. Okay. House of the Blooded is specifically designed so that you are out to get each other. Period. The world is interesting and fun. It's got flavor. Sure, whatever, I'm killing you.
But Houses of the Blooded was built by somebody who read way too much Amber.
Yes.
What's Amber? Sorry.
Amber is...
I'm sorry.
Amber's an old series of books that was partially written... In fact, mostly written... was written by Wuchik, right?
No. Zelazny.
Zelazny. That's right. It was written by Zelazny. And the whole concept was... basically, you're gods. You're not really gods. You're powerful. You're strong. You're smart. You are this, that, and the other thing. And you can travel between dimensions, essentially. The way they told you that... Yeah. No. They had a good excuse for it. They said, you come from here. You come from a point that is real. And every other dimension is just a shade different than yours.
Mm-hmm.
And the further out you go, the more different they become. And they say commonly, like, because Amber's a fantasy realm. You know, you got people with swords and sorcery and craziness. This is where you come from, the player character. And then as you get started getting closer to the middle, you start seeing technology, modernization. And then we're close to the middle, where we're at. And so when you pop up here, you're like, I'm shooting lightning out of my buttocks. Yeah! And we're like, machine gun? Maybe hit you with a, oh my god, what is that thing? And the whole theme of the game is that you can go around, and you are basically unstoppable in a lot of cases. You're the best at something, but you're never the worst at anything. And you have misadventures through these other shadows. And to add some mix-up to it, there's obviously another side to that spectrum. And they send their minions, which are just like you, out to get you.
Not just that, but you have the infighting within your own faction which is where I was actually
that's true.
The comparison with Houses of the Blooded,
mm-hmm.
Because your father, because all of you are siblings of some sort in Amber, he's not paying much attention to what's going on anymore, so all of the siblings are doing the dynastic moving and shaking because he hasn't declared an heir.
Yeah, so you got murder, amnesia, enforced amnesia, exile. You've got terrible magic.
A lot of alliances and backstabbing, and that's where you get into my comment about Houses of the Blooded being a lot like Amber. We'll make an alliance of convenience, and when you're not looking, I'm going to stab you in the back because it's more convenient for me.
The trick is, it's not supposed to be a negative Nancy. The trick is, you know this going into this game.
Yes.
You are a snake, or you are a bear, or you are an elk, and you're supposed to have house pride. And there's a lot of reasons to have it. The game provides awesome, colorful story for why you'd want to be these things. But at the same time, that guy's an elk, or that guy's a bear, or that lady's a snake. Like, okay, well, there's a mix of us now. Oh, my. All right. And then the GM isn't a game master. The way it's set up, especially in House of the Blooded, is they set up a scene, and they take notes of what everybody's doing. And then when it's appropriate, they close the scene, they start a new scene, and they start reading off, well, you've made it to the castle. And during the last scene, the following happened to change the scene. This person has died. This person got backstabbed. You are currently poisoned. The dogs have been set. All right, go. And then they back off. All the things the players have done change the scene elements. And the players have to deal with that. And then they go and they do their scene elements again to go backstab and skull.
You, sir, over there, your tea is ready.
It can happen. Just got to watch out for that tea. Because in House of the Blooded, there again, you play basically elves.
Mm-hmm.
You live for a long time. You get all the weird politics that way. But there's just a touch of magic. There's just a touch of these other things. And the reason why it's just barely there is so that you can explain that, don't drink that tea. Why? Is it poison? No, that cup's going to eat you. You know what? Yeah.
Oh.
It doesn't make sense, that's but convenient. There's just enough magic to go, well, that it's not the tea that's lethal, it's the cup. It's not it's not the dart that's lethal, it's the, you know, the magic stuff behind it. It's, okay, I see that. It gives you an extra angle that you can attack and or defend from.
I need to get involved in that sometime, because that sounds like fun.
Yeah, and it's easy to get into, because like all John Wick games, it's made so that you can show up, spend no more than 10 minutes, have a complete character ready to rock at any encounter level, and play.
So. There's so much to do.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of it you do, but it's a workout just to get any of it in a given week.
I do less than I want.
Like, I've literally had the scheduled time to go meet up with Wally and Woody for the GURPS campaign. And I was like, okay, Tuesday night. Nothing else. Everything else, stay away. And even that, like, and that's what's happened the last few months for me. It was like, okay, things are falling apart. I have to give that up for a while. So now I'm just waiting for the day for it all to open up again. But I'm going back to school soon, so that may not happen. But it's a dream. I can dream.
Always worth the dream. And catching stuff wherever you can is still worth it. Don't stick your head in the ground because you don't have a regular game schedule. It's always worth popping your head up and going, all right, what is available at this time? Okay, that's cool. Sweet.
Well, I mean, man, I can't believe how long this is. This has been a quick hour. Thanks a lot, for giving me a chance to talk to you. And, I mean, this whole thing is kind of brand new. So I don't know how many people listen to it really at this point, but if you want to plug anything...
Sure. Throw me a link and I'll make sure to spread it around.
All right. Cool. Pat, appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time. This has been fun. I'm cool. I learned a lot.
Cool, man.
And hope we get to talk again sometime.
Yeah, let's do that.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you. You guys are great. You guys are hospitable in more ways than I can tell you.
Hey, wife, who said we're hospitable?
It's okay.
No, that's a good thing. It means you're good. Positive.
All right, okay. Cool, man.
Oh, man, thanks a lot. This is fun. I'm glad this setup worked.
This has been a presentation of Front Row Geeks. Adios.